That's a really big question.
This is Sunday Nights.
I do not believe that the world was created in 7 days, 6,000 years ago.
On ABC Local Radio.
Hi there, and thanks for joining us. Well, this week, amidst the turbulence of Canberra's last sitting week, you may have caught one other event in the media. Mining magnate Twiggy Forrest launched the Australian arm of his Global Freedom Network to combat human trafficking. 1 year after the joint declaration of religious leaders against modern slavery was signed in the Vatican, Twiggy Forrest, chairman of the Global Freedom Network, joined with more than a dozen Australian religious leaders calling for a clampdown on slavery across the country, declaring no one should be enslaved in Australia after the next 5 years. Well, slavery is a strange and almost alien term to associate with a democratic country like Australia, but as recent exposés from agriculture to retail have shown, exploitation merely requires opportunity. And according to the Global Slavery Index, about 3,000 people in Australia are currently working in conditions akin to slavery. They may not be wearing chains or manacles, but according to Commissioner James Condon of the Salvation Army, they can be found across the economy from agriculture to retail and even, of course, the sex industry. The Australia Freedom Network was launched by a group of religious leaders from across all faith traditions. They've committed to taking measurable action to end human trafficking by 2020. So it's welcome to our guests, Jenny Stanger from the Salvation Army, Sister Nolene Simmons from ACRATH, the Australian Catholic Religious Against Human Trafficking, Ahmed Abdo, New South Wales Islamic Police Chaplain, and Fuzz Kiddo of Spirited Consulting. Welcome to you all.
Thank you, John.
Good to have you with us. Jenny Stanger, I believe James Condon of the Salvation Army have accepted to be the sort of coordinating agency in this endeavour. Lots of people have been working in this area over years, as we've heard from Catholic sisters have been working in this with ACRATH for some years. So what's different about this initiative that was launched in Canberra during the week?
Well, this is the first time that all the faith leaders, senior faith leaders from Australia, have come together, I think, really to help amplify some of the work that's been going on from groups like ACRATH, from Stop the Traffic. The Salvation Army's been running a refuge for victims of trafficking and slavery for the last 8 years. So I think it's really about amplifying that work and amplifying it from the top to engage that faith movement.
Fuzz Kiddo, your work with Spirited Consulting has brought you as the spokesperson for Stop the Traffic, and you've been in the studio a number of times over the last 5 years discussing this issue. How do you see this initiative playing into what's already existing?
Well, we operate so much as a consumer organisation and a coalition of 40 organisations, but we've never had the chance to bring together the leaders of those organisations. Some are, of course, faith-based, and some are NGOs. But I think this initiative, and it's the initiative that Andrew Forrest has been working on around the world, so 2 days after, on Friday, he was in India with five leaders of religious groupings across India as well. And, of course, he did it with the Pope Francis, and the Archbishop of Canterbury and the Grand Imam.
That's just a year ago, wasn't it, when
yes,
they did
it was.
The big launch?
Yeah. And so what he's doing is trying to get together the leaders of religions around the world and say, look, we all believe that injustice is just not acceptable to our God's understanding. And so I think what this is doing is actually amplifying, as Jenny said, it really is amplifying the issue of saying, hey, listen, we want to stand together on this. And as we often say in Stop the Traffic, it's only together that we're actually going to stop human trafficking around the world. Mm-hmm.
Ahmed Abdo, it's important for people in the Muslim community to be involved in an exercise like this because, as many of those who talk about this globally point out, this is a traffic that knows no borders or boundaries. It crosses faith traditions, it crosses national boundaries. How do you see the contribution that the Islamic community can make to this enterprise, particularly in Australia?
Without doubt, I mean, people of faith and particularly the Muslim faith are overly concerned with regard to the removal of injustice and oppression to whoever it may occur. So that's part and parcel of the faith, for whether it be a community member or a leader. We see God as the most just, and so therefore, any act of oppression of any human being, of any free-minded, liberal, acting, adult, mature human being, or any child, we see that as a result of the misuse and the they're being taken advantage of by other people within society. And when we come together with people of other faiths who have similar interests and agreed upon principles in that regard, I think our voice becomes stronger. So if you were to get one faith community to come out and speak out against this, then the voice is going to only reach a certain distance. But if we've got all faith communities coming together on this agreed upon issue and principle, then I think it's just going to be so much more powerful and effective for wider society and community.
Sister Nolene Simmons, ACRATH, the Australian Catholic Religious Against Human Trafficking, have been involved in this space for a number of years. Can you give us some insight into the sorts of work you're doing? Most people would understand that initially this was in the area of sex trafficking and people being trafficked into Australia, young women down through Southeast Asia or across from Eastern Europe as far back as 1989 when the Berlin Wall collapsed. Are they now saying, no, this is something else? We talk about human slavery here and giving it a much wider perspective. But just give us some idea of the sorts of areas you've been working in and what you've been doing practically.
Yes, John. Actually, 2015 is the 10th anniversary year of ACRATH, being formed as an organisation to work against human slavery in Australia, in the Asia Pacific and beyond. And our emphasis is on raising awareness through education programs, through presentations that we give in schools and to community groups, church groups, etc., but also through advocacy, through direct service for victims who have been trafficked into Australia. Actually, we don't normally like using the word victims because these are people with dignity. But certainly we have members who do give pastoral support to people who have been trafficked into Australia. And we also believe very, very much that this is an issue that we can't do by ourselves as an organisation. We need to work in collaboration with other groups. And that's why it was important for us to be part of the event on Wednesday with the signing of the declaration.
It started, though, principally in sex trafficking for you, doesn't it?
Yes, it was certainly
expanded now.
Yes, definitely. Definitely, we're very much aware of the growth of labour trafficking in Australia, exploitation in supply chains, and also there has even been an alleged case of organ trafficking into Australia. And so it's not just sex trafficking. That's only one element of the emphasis that we have on our work to raise awareness and work against it.
Jenny Stanger, this sounds a bit like the field that trade unions were into 100 years ago, indeed what trade unions were created to look out for.
I mean, even in just going back to what you just raised with Nolene, the Australian response, the reason that victims have been found in the sex industry for the last 10 or so years is because our response was very much designed to target exploitative conduct in that industry. But in 2013, there was a big shift in our criminal justice response, which I would say sort of leveled the playing field between, you know, someone working on a farm in slavery-like conditions and someone working in a brothel in slavery-like conditions. So, in other words, you know, you find what you're looking for. And for 10, 15 years, we were looking at this issue with a particular pair of lenses, and that's why we found a particular scenario. Now we've got many other lenses and sets of glasses that we can put on so that we can see this issue across construction, across agriculture, hospitality, retail, the things that you mentioned. So, I think, you know, unions are probably our next sort of target to partner with as well, because they are a natural partner, I think, for social justice issues, particularly, you know, this is about workers' rights to some degree and preserving and increasing workers' rights. So, yeah. We certainly see them as a key partner going forward. In fact, ACRATH ourselves and the National Union of Workers have a campaign right now on slavery-like conditions in agriculture.
Ahmed Abdo, you're somebody who wears a number of hats. One of them is as a police chaplain. And even the police have begun to come up against these sorts of issues in the last 10 years. How do you see it from your perspective working in the community? Do you see it as something that is just a law enforcement issue, or do you see ordinary people being able to spot the sorts of things that you're concerned about, that this group is concerned about, and be able to be actively involved in actually saying, look, I'm going to tell somebody about this, and who is it that they tell? They come to an organisation like this, did that get passed up the chain to law enforcement? Where? How does this stuff all fit together?
Look, I think, John, there's got to be a two-pronged approach, and that is one of tackling the issue after it's spread, after its viruses have spread into the depths of society, as well as one of prevention, because if it were not for people bringing such human beings out for that trafficking business or to conduct themselves in a sex trade or to exploit them in regards to their labour, that only happens because of the mindset of that person that is really pushing that particular agenda. Mm-hmm. And so they're willing to put someone else's life and freedom on the line in order to gain an extra dollar. And so I think there needs to be a holistic approach with regard to this. Yes, we need to have people that are on alert, that are looking through lenses and binoculars in various sectors of society and calling people out where they need to be called out and getting the assistance and the help of our law enforcement agencies to ensure that the necessary action is taken against those perpetrators. But at the same time, and I think this is perhaps the more difficult and long-term solution, and that is one of prevention. How are we going to ensure that there are people that conduct themselves on an ethical basis in their business, in their transactions, in their interactions with people within Australia as well as internationally? And I think if we do take that two-pronged approach, we're going to have a more comprehensive solution to this human trafficking trade.
Yes, if the only bottom line for business is how much profit I can deliver to my shareholders, then where are the boundaries?
And that's where I think we need to be reminded of this terminology that's being introduced into our society, and that is not only an entrepreneur or a profit entrepreneur, but a social entrepreneur, in that it's no longer how much I make, but how much difference can I contribute to the lives of other people. And so rather than people using others for their own profit and gain, what they're going to be doing is they're going to be contributing positively to the lives of others, where there's going to be a win-win situation. And I think that's the direction that we need to be headed to in our Western society, and in fact, in all societies in the world.
Faz Kiddo, just in the last few weeks, I think Australians have been genuinely shocked, and perhaps I could ask all of you to comment on this, by the revelations. First, you had the 7-Eleven story, then you had the Baeda chicken story, and last week it was Myers and a franchise company working for Myers, all of these sort of underpaying workers at standards that most Australians say they can't get away with that. Surely there are things in place. Is this part of what you see as, well, how is it that we've come to this in Australia? I mean, you have somebody who's kicked around this issue of ethics and work and business. Where did this come from? I mean, are these things that have been going on all the time, or have we just been blithely ignorant of them?
Some have and some haven't. Some of it is new, and it's because of the change that has happened in the world economics. I mean, one of the big questions that we do not ask, in all fairness to President Obama, he tried to do it, didn't have a chance, is the question of, is this economic model that we're working under around the world, does it actually work? There's no evidence whatsoever that it works. It's a boom, bust, boom, bust. And as Ahmed was saying, it is about the values that we have. Now, we had a fashion forum last week with 50 of the fashion labels in Australia. We got in the person who is the supply chain manager for Hague's Chocolates, because we've been working with them, and they're working to 100% certification with UTZ.
To pause on that, Hague's Chocolates have saying that their whole supply chain, from the cocoa supplier right through to the finished product, mm-hmm. is going to be clean. Now, that means it's an international transaction, doesn't it?
Exactly right. And the whole thing is that we cannot separate ourselves from the economics that are happening around the world. The global financial crisis was the wake-up call of how interdependent we are with all the financial systems around the world. And so, but what Peter was saying from Hague's, and we got him to speak to the fashion industry, and we had people from the big fashion chains, from Wesfarmers, through to some of the small fashion areas. But we wanted to get someone from an industry who had made a decision as a company, this is what we wanted to do. And he started off by saying, I've got to say, this is personal. This is not just about the business. This is actually about being a human being. And he said, it's personal because it was a value question. And he said, what we had to decide and what I had to do in standing up in the company was to say, you know, I think we've got to deal with this because there's a value. He said, this is not about marketing. This is actually about values. Now, what we've seen is this shift that's happened within the values, and we'll be working with Meijer as well to try and help them to sign the Stop the Traffic Protocol to say that we will make transparent and we will make visible our supply chain back through, because our greatest contact in Australia that we have with modern slavery, human trafficking, is through what we buy. It's there in the supply chain. And I think that the economic models, the business models that fashion and food and all the areas are working under has really been called into question by saying, hang on, I mean, it's like Amy was saying, it's what's the values do we have here? What does it mean to be a human being?
Jenny, one of the problems that businesses might say these days when we're expanding this beyond sex trafficking is they say, well, point to what Fuss says, the global financial crisis, yes, it happened, but what's also happened is that we are now have opened our borders in terms of our economy, and people can make things very cheaply in other countries, and in fact, they're making things at a level which we would regard as exploitative, but in their country, that's a fair level of pay. And look, I have to actually minimise my wages bill in order to actually survive as a business. So it's better to pay them a little bit than to pay them nothing at all.
Well, I mean, you know, if you look at the concept of fair trade, you know, and a fair trade type certification or accreditation, that includes a living wage relative to the country that people are living in. Okay, so the fair trade mark, for example, does take that into account. In addition to that, it also includes elimination of child labor in the supply chain. So there are standards that do sort of address that. I think where we can't accept that is in the Australian supply chain. You cannot pay someone $3 an hour or $5 an hour for something they should be paid for, you know, $20, $21, $24 an hour. We can't accept that as a standard here in our own country. So it's really important that we do look at these issues on a spectrum of workers' rights and the exploitation of workers. And we shouldn't disconnect slavery, like when someone's actually lost their freedom, from that point where a good job becomes a bad job, right? So it's all connected, and we have to be very, very intentional about not allowing there to be a disconnect, because exploitation paves the road to slavery. And they're all on the same continuum.
But there is a difference, John, between labour abuse and slavery. And that's really important. What was happening in 7-Eleven, what was happening in the my subsidiary, etc., was labour abuse primarily, not slavery. And that's one of the important
things. There is
things.
A continuum, though, isn't there? I mean, at what point does your wage get to a level you can say this is virtual slavery?
Well, and I think in that 7-Eleven case too, like, there's not a whole lot of people that have come forward yet to tell explicitly what their story is. I mean, we've been in some contact around that case with the lawyers and the union working on that case. And, you know, again, people's fear of breaching their immigration status is what's keeping them from disclosing what's happened. Mm. So we really need to get our focus shifted off of whether or not someone is compliant with their visa, so we can find out if they're actually a victim of a much more serious crime.
Mm. Mm. Mm-hmm. No way.
Yes, and I think the other thing to be aware of is it's not just the amount of money that they're being paid, you know, poor wages. It's also the number of hours that they're being forced to work, so that, you know, that sort of limits their freedom too, especially when they're having to work 12, 20 hours a day. There's not much time left in the day for them. and you know, they're really being controlled. And I think that's where this slavery issue comes in, when somebody is being controlled.
It's about coercion. Yeah? Yeah, it's about how do you remove someone's ability to have choice and control over the situation that they're in. Mm. So it's right. It is important distinction that you're raising. Like you know, a bad job that you can leave is a bad job. It's the jobs where you cannot change your situation or change, you know, what's going on because you're being coerced.
And that's where the situation for migrants is particularly difficult, or students on migrant visas or on student visas, because those visas have very particular conditions around them. And that's where I think the 7-Eleven trap was for those who got caught in it.
Sure. And and that's a trap for students working in a whole lot of, I mean, 7-Eleven is one retail outlet.
Yeah.
The other thing, John, which I think is a key thing in this, is also the mesmerisation that we have in the West of owning things. Now, there's two ways to get more. One is that you get more money to pay for it, or the other thing is you get goods cheaper. And that's where the pressure is coming from, and that's one of the big changes that happened. You look at the adverts on the media at the moment, and continuous, this is so cheap. You know, here it's cheaper, 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 cheaper. It's an unreal economy. We actually got to pay for things, and it's that demand for goods at a cheaper rate which is pushing and forcing a lot of companies to go, how do we get it as cheap
down,
as possible?
Down, prices are down.
That's the one.
Rings in the back of the head.
Who pays? Who's paying for that?
Okay, let's talk now about how this latest initiative is going to help groups such as those you represent begin to work together. Jenny, the Salvation Army is, I understand, the lead agency in this. What does that mean?
Oh, we're just a facilitator, honestly. It's really about us, you know, using the relationships that we have to bring people together. And it's about the network coming together and deciding where it wants to spend its, you know, limited time and resources as well on some targeted campaigns, some targeted issues. It is also about each faith group developing its own internal action plan to raise awareness amongst their faith community. Awareness is great, but we're actually supporting the different faith leaders to develop meaningful and measurable action plans going forward so that it's not just about raising awareness.
So there will be a coordinating body established
that. There will be. And, you know, we hope to be able to collect some good data about all the actions people are taking. But it's really about bringing the existing campaigns that are out there amongst, you know, a small network of people to this network, which is a much, much larger group of people. And getting, you know, some of that attention on some of the key policy issues, again, so that we're not just disconnecting this anti-slavery stuff from our, you know, economic, trade and migration policy.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio around Australia through Radio Australia via the web to the world. And on Radio Australia, we're going up into the region where some of those who want to be in Australia and may be subject to the sorts of conditions we're talking about find themselves. 1-300-800-222. If you want to give us a call and ask our panel questions, Jenny Stanger from the Salvation Army, Sister Nolene Simmons from the Australian Catholic Religious Against Human Trafficking, Ahmed Abdo, New South Wales Islamic Police Chaplain, and Fuzz Kitto, Stop the Traffic and Spirited Consulting. Ahmed, let me come to you again for a moment. People coming from Islamic countries, Muslim countries, many of those have come from situations in which they've been under threat, have difficult circumstances around them. Any situation for them when they come to a country like Australia is better than what they've been in. For some people, does it take a while to wake up that, hang on, I don't need to be attached to the sort of conditions I'm working in? Is that a particular trap for refugee families and others?
Well, I think that's a very, very important concern, and it's very, very real. Because when you've been granted political safety in a society that is safeguarding your political, your economic, your personal, your societal rights, and you've fled a country which you're fearing for your life, you're fearing for the life of your family, your children, you don't know where your next loaf of bread is going to come from, and you're getting something which compared to the rest of members of society is extremely minimal, but we can compare it back home, then this, you're living the life of a king, then I think this is extremely problematic. And this is where we come to the importance of movements like this that are deeply rooted within faith movements. Because I think those people that do come, for instance, from the Middle East and are Muslim, they are deeply connected perhaps with their faith congregation, with their mosque. They tend to listen to the sermons of the imam that will conduct the services on a weekly basis. And in fact, something very, very successful that's happened, for instance, with White Ribbon Day, is that there was a national sermon or Friday service given around mosques in Australia on the subject of domestic violence and creating that awareness. And in fact, I delivered a sermon, and some of the people said, we need you to speak about this every single Friday. So I've made a commitment that every mosque that I rotate in the next few weeks, I'm going to give the same sermon, raising the awareness about we're not going to accept any form of domestic violence, but we're not speaking about that tonight. We're speaking about this anti-slavery and human trafficking. So I think the first step, as Jenny said, is to take that step in creating awareness. And creating awareness, we need to bring those people who may not know that they're in fact victims, and to bring it to their attention that this is not the way that you should be living, that you have the right to stand up for your rights. Not only that, but we're going to support you, and we're going to provide for you the support network in order for you to rid yourself of that difficulty.
How do you do it? I mean, if you go back 100 years, Jenny, the Salvation Army had mobilised lay people. Its soldiers went out and went into the highways and the byways and the alleys, and they were the foot soldiers on the ground going into those places where labour exploitation was going on, beginning to help local organisation. There's been examples in the Catholic tradition of organisations like lay workers in Vinnies going out and finding people. So this the real strength of church communities over the years, or religious communities over the years, has been this capacity to mobilise people at the grassroots. Do you see that as part of this?
Yes.
Jolene first, please.
John, that's one of the reasons that we have awareness raising as one of our really important activities, that if we can raise awareness by talking to students in school, sending them home to tell their parents, many of the schools in New South Wales and in Sydney that we're working in would have strong ethnic communities. And so trying to get the message out through schools, through community groups, but also encouraging those people to pass the message on. And I think also some of the initiatives that we've developed over recent years, just in this last 12 months, the Pope has named that the 8th of February each year is the World Day of Prayer Against Human Trafficking. And it's certainly an activity that ACRAT last year and again this coming year will put a lot of effort into, sending out resources and material to parishes and to community groups to raise awareness about this. It's not something that, as I said before, just an organisation can deal with by themselves. It's something that we need the whole of society to take on board. And that's one of my hopes about the outcome of this joint declaration that was signed by faith leaders the other day, that we will be able to mobilise our people more and to let them see there are little ways that they can do things, but there are big ways that they can do things as well. You know, little things like telling another person, it's raising awareness. You know, like looking for certification on chocolates that they buy. They're all things that are sending a message and making people aware that this is the case. Obviously, we'd hope that some of these people would also make donations to organisations so that we can continue the work that we're doing and hopefully one day become unnecessary as an organisation.
So it's both getting people to do things themselves, like fair trade and all of that and following those Hague's supply chain and all that, but is it also mobilising people to be on the ground foot soldiers, Jenny, in that tradition where you get people who are actually become agents looking in their own communities for examples of people who are being sort of, you think, on dodgy wages?
Yeah, look,
dodgy,
I mean, we've been running a refuge, right, for 8 years, and, you know, we've served over 300 victims through that service, and many of those referrals have come from members of the public who recognized someone's situation in the community that they were concerned about, and they asked that person if they needed help. And from my experience, you know, I've been doing this work for 18 years now. People in slavery are often hidden in plain sight.
That's
Right? They might be that 7-Eleven worker.
Because they don't want to ask for help.
Right? They might be the 7-Eleven worker. They might be the person tiling your bathroom. They might be the person serving your food at a restaurant. And there are many things that are keeping them, preventing them from asking for help, but they're hoping that someone will see their situation and just care and ask them. I think one of our messages is to create caring communities, not where we're alarmed that everyone, you know, who's a migrant is a victim of, you know, human trafficking, but to have these caring communities where people feel that it's okay to ask somebody, you know, are you okay? Is the situation that you're in a situation you want to be in? And if the person says no and asks for help, do something with that information. You know, there are people who, when they do ask for help, actually the person doesn't do anything with that information. Yeah. I mean, I've had clients that I've worked with who've said, I asked many people for help and people did nothing. And that's quite a sad thing to hear because, you know, sometimes that means I was in slavery for another year. So it is about caring communities. We don't, you know, we do want people to contact us and to contact law enforcement if they're concerned about someone. Let us help you assess that information and what to do with that information.
You're going to have a website up and running?
Yes. Well, the Salvation Army, we have the Freedom Partnership website, which is endslavery.salvos.org.au. If people want to share information about a particular situation they're worried about, we're asking people of faith who are interested in what the Australian Freedom Network will be doing together to go on to afn.org.au. You can support your faith leader by signing a declaration yourself, and we will keep you in the loop for what's happening. We're going to ask people to support our campaigns, and those campaigns will be sorted out in 2016. So get onto the database so that when we make that call to action, you can put your faith in action.
Ahmed, will there be a particular call out through mosques of various traditions?
I'd certainly envisage, since His Eminence the Grand Mufti was a signatory on this particular declaration, that our national body, the Australian National Imams Council, will take this issue extremely seriously and without doubt start to mobilise the community leaders to start to raise awareness within the various constituent groups on a national level, within mosques, within Islamic centres and community organisations, as well as those that would be attending congregations. And I think that is key to ensuring that there's a great success to this program.
Fuzz, Stop the Traffic over the years has been working internationally and in Australia. It's worked mainly with people contributing money to help the cause run. How do you see what Stop the Traffic has done and its model blending into this?
Most of it's not been giving money to it. We kind of wish it was sometimes. it's been more about action. You see, our hero, William Wilberforce, worked out that you can have all the awareness, all this great speeches, and he did some brilliant speeches and some brilliant sermons. But it was not until he could say to people, don't put that sugar in your tea, it's made from the blood of the backs of the slaves in the West Indies, that people went, we could do that. We really think that the key thing, and this is like signing a statement is actually one of the easiest things in the world to do. Mm-hmm. The guts of it, and I think what's going to come out of what happened on Wednesday is when mosques and churches, when Buddhist temples and other religious gatherings and organisations say, this is not the sort of world that we want. We were going to put an action for this. We're going to become a traffic-free church. So what we buy, what we do, is going to have an action to it,
That requires a bit of name and shame activity.
Not necessarily name and shame, you see, because most of it, in supply chains particularly, most of the companies and the people we talk to don't say, you know, I really think slavery is a really great idea. We really should have more of that. Most of them say, look, we don't want it. We just don't know how. And that's where the action is so important. That's why we work with organisations and with companies particularly, because that's the greatest power we've got. We're rich. We buy. Because manufacturing's gone offshore, we can have the greatest effect actually by putting into action. And that is all of these things together, which is key, that that we're going to bring about the change. And it's together.
Let's take some calls on 1300 800 222. If you've got any questions for our panel, please feel free to give us a call, 1300 800 222. And we're all putting our headphones on now so we can hear what you have to say. It's good evening to Arthur in Ainslie first up. Arthur, welcome to you. What would you like to say?
Thank you. this business of cancelling their visas seems to be a very common practice. I think these people have been ripped off. I think that's singularly un-Australian. They should be looked after. Their visa should be extended so that they can stay legally in the country and they can then be witnesses for the prosecution. A few years ago, we had a big scandal about young women being brought from all sorts of places in Asia under very unsavoury circumstances. Every time these women were found, the immigration authorities got them out of the country as fast as they possibly could. So it was impossible for the police to prosecute the perpetrators. I think this is a pattern, and I wonder whether it's accidental, and we should give a helping hand to these people, keep them here, extend their visas, look after them, make sure they're okay, and have them prosecute these people and put them in the nick.
Thanks for your observation, Arthur. Does anybody want to comment on what Arthur has to say? Nolene?
Yes, I think that you're making a very good point. Certainly now people who have been identified by the AFP as being trafficked into Australia, there is a support program that they are referred to and given support. However, some of these labour exploitation situations recently, it's been a great anxiety of ours that some of these people have just been sent back to their country of origin within 24 hours. And we would agree with you that there does need to be a longer period of time for them to be here so that investigations can take place, firstly, to determine whether or not these people have been victims of human trafficking. Secondly, for the purpose of prosecuting those who have exploited them. And thirdly, for them to receive the wages that they really are entitled to. And that point was very much part of our advocacy visit when ACRAT spent a week in federal parliament in September of this year. We spoke to many, many members of parliament about that very issue.
Ahmed, I know you're not officially a member of the police force, but you're connected at a very lowly level, working your way up the hierarchy there and talking to people. But one has sensed a change across police forces in Australia over the last few years, that they seem to be becoming more sensitive to these community interface issues. Are you sensing that, say, for instance, on the sort of example that Nolene gave, that a few years ago the police had just get them out of the country, whack them off, send them away. The police are more interested now, saying, hang on, let's see what's going on here.
Yeah, look, I think there's a lot of dots that seem to be connected by people in various agencies and particularly that which we see within police and other government agencies, and that is that we will not be able to come to a more proactive and positive community unless we walk hand in hand with our constituent communities, because we've got such a diverse population and no law enforcement agency is going to be able to achieve anything for the greater common good of society unless they've got community members on side. And I think that is the secret and that is the key. So certainly I think that there is much truth in these type of observations.
Thank you, Arthur, for your observation. To John in Sydney. G'day, John. How are you? Good to have you with us.
Oh, hi, John. How are you?
Yeah, well.
And to your terrific guests, well done. You know, I sometimes say that to your guests, but it's so heartfelt. It's just terrific that people are doing it in such a bright bunch. But look, just a couple of things occurred to me. It is interesting, as I was saying to your producer, how many MPs have referred to William Wilberforce in their maiden speeches and then gone on to do nothing that resembles anything like what he's done, even in the most insipid ways. They just, you know, but it sounds good, doesn't it, I guess, in your maiden speech. But, or maybe they just like to feel deluded. But I want to make that point. And the other one I wanted to make quickly, two things. I mean, we've got our Prime Minister at the moment, our ex-Prime Minister, accused again of rorting transport, and all these things just go on and on. The sense of entitlement, people looking for ministerial positions by gaining the system according to their colleagues. And it's no wonder that this stuff gets ignored. And if you look at the one of the iconic examples, which has been mentioned already, the 7-Eleven one. What a cunning plan, isn't it? All accidental, of course. Because if you wanted to plan something like this and you realised that they wouldn't complain or even come forward now when the jig was nearly up because they'd be scared of being, you know, deported, that's when the action would occur, not before. Well, that's a cunning plan. And it's all happened by accident, John.
Oh, John, you're making assumptions there that, you know, I couldn't possibly comment on. Some of our panel might. It goes back to your point, though, Fuzz, doesn't it? It's the general ethical tenor under which we operate.
It's what sort of culture do we want to be? That is really the big, big question. Do we want to be a culture which says we stick up for everybody because every single person is important? And certainly in a religious perspective, that is what religion gives. It gives the answer to the why are people important. It gives the answer to the why are we here. It gives the answer of why we are communities and cultures and nations.
And not economic units.
And not economic units. I think probably one of the best things that came out of the last federal election was the then leader of the Greens who said, can someone please tell the big parties that we're a society, not an economy? And I think that's the key thing, which is about what sort of values do we want to corporately share to be the sort of place that we dream of as human beings.
Let's go to Barry at Mount Isa. Hello, Barry, how are you?
Hello, good sir. How are you?
Yeah, well, what would you like to say?
Oh, just before I say something, I'd just like to wish everyone a very happy festive season.
Well, thank you so much, and back to you as well.
Yeah. Now, basically, when it comes to things like exploitation and things of this nature, I think what you've got to have is a coordinated community approach. You've got to have all your government agencies and institutions and your other major government, other major community institutions and organisations involved, as well as trying to raise the general awareness of the general community. Like, for example, here in Mount Isa, I'm involved with the Mount Isa Crime Stoppers Area Committee. And at least in respect of Crime Stoppers, whether a lot of people don't realise this, that if they are either suffering from criminal actions against themselves or they're aware of criminal actions against someone else, and of course exploitation is a criminal act, they can report these things to Crime Stoppers anonymously without having to get personally involved.
Well, that's a very useful observation, and I'm sure some of our panel will take note of that, that Crime Stoppers can be a channel by which these things can be brought to light. So thank you for that observation. We will have to move on, Barry, but thanks very much for that. To Bob in Yass. Hello, Bob. Welcome.
Hi, team. How are you going?
We're great.
That's good. Yeah, look, there was, yeah, a few years ago there was a exploitation of workers at a temple in Flory. And my dad was a big on the unions, and so was I. And he was absolutely shocked that a cultural temple that was exploiting workers to put tiles and all the internal stuff in there, and no one cared, and it took the unions, you know, the CMFMU, to say something about that.
Yeah, that's a very interesting observation. That often those who want to uphold the highest ethical standards can be guilty of sort of slipping away from it themselves, and it becomes voluntary labour. And when does voluntary labour become exploitative? I mean, it's how much of the burden of guilt you're carrying, isn't it? Not it's how much you're prepared to put in. But it is nevertheless true. We've got to be very vigilant amongst our own organisations.
And I think, again, it's organisations working together, John. That's the key part. I mean, we're just negotiating at the moment with Trades Hall in Victoria, and we'll do this with others, about getting into high schools and helping young people to understand what the union movement is about, but also how to help them to be good citizens by saying, what are the justice areas we want to invest our lives in and make a difference in? I think it's when we start to do that, that all these things start to pressure, and we have a common peer pressure across the communities to say, hey, this is the values that we believe in, and this is what we're going to stick to. Hypocrisy is one of the things that Australians hate most.
Bob, thanks for your call. To David in Templestowe. Hello, David.
G'day, how are you?
Yeah, good. What would you like to say?
I think it's what goes on behind the scenes that we're all not aware of. I was made aware of one of these numbers of girls who were imported into Australia because I actually do work in Asia. And I was aware of when it was going to take place and so on and so forth. I rang no less than the Secretary of the Department of Immigration and spoke to his PA and got not one word of response. I rang the AFP on three occasions, not one reply. And a month later, an AFP guy, arrogant guy, arrives on my doorstep and says, I think you've got some information. I said, mate, it's too late. It's already happened.
How long ago was this, David?
Look, this is about this was actually about 6 years ago. And I'll go one further. I then got a call from the AFP guy who was stationed in Asia, and I actually met him in Asia. And he said, "You're not a you're not particularly concerned that this wouldn't take and that nothing had happened." I said, "No, well, no one seems to care." He said, "Well, I can tell you, no one does care. This is an AFP guy who was actually stationed in Asia, who I met personally, and he tried to set up the scam. And I introduced him to people who were aware of what had taken place." And these girls were picked up in a corporate jet, flown out of the country, were given dodgy visas out of an Australian embassy in another city, and flown into Australia. And I spoke to a journalist who wrote an article which was appeared on the front page of The Age, and he told me, you know what the problem is? He said, "What the Mr. Big behind this," he said, "I've researched it, the Mr. Big behind this is a political donor."
That's a very very sad but maybe a story that echoes with people. Whether or not the precise details can be confirmed or not is beyond the scope of this program, David. But Jenny, is that the sort of story you've heard before?
No, I haven't heard that kind of story, but I guess what I would say in response to that is sometimes you may not get the response that you were hoping for when you contact law enforcement, but it doesn't mean that you can't contact groups like the Salvation Army and ACRETH. I mean, we work all over the world. We have, parts of our organization on the ground in every country. And sometimes NGOs can provide a really meaningful response if we have the opportunity to assess the same information. And also maybe to leverage some of the relationships that we do have with government to maybe help people get the response that they were hoping for. It is disappointing when you hear that Australia does have a response to human trafficking and slavery, and then you see that situation and you may not, you may reach out to try to help someone. I mean, it can be utterly disappointing, but sometimes there are alternatives that are worth pursuing as well. And I would encourage people to not give up on someone who does need assistance.
Fuzz, attitudes are changing?
Mm-hmm. Attitudes are changing. And in the Australian Federal Police in the last 3 years, there's been a massive change in the culture and awareness of what's happening. And now they have their own budget. They now have ways to start to respond. And I think that we should be lobbying government to say we need more resources in this area to help them to do it.
Well, that's another argument for federal aid for good causes and overseas aid to be improved.
I mean, we should tell
We've only got about 15 seconds. I'm going to have to cut you off, Jenny. It's a whole other topic I'd love to talk about, but I've got to thank you all. Jenny Stanger from the Salvation Army, Nolene Simmons from ACRETH, Ahmed Abdo, Islamic chaplain to the New South Wales Police, and Fuzz Kiddo. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.